One of the great pleasures of the work I do in updating my guidebooks to Europe is eating my way around some great culinary capitals. The last time I was in Tuscany, I enjoyed an evening exploring the restaurant scene of Florence with Toni Mazzaglia. She runs half-day food and wine tours of the city and made sure I knew about its traditions and what was new and popular with the locals. Toni joins us now from her home in Florence. Toni, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Rick. Thank you for having me.
Boy, I had such a great evening with you. You and I spent an entire evening running around. I had a list of restaurants to check, and you were right there making sure I knew what was happening in Florence. These are very popular all over the world these days, isn't it? You can hire local experts to take a food tour.
Yes, almost anywhere, even towns that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be, well, it's a new sort of phenom, but a fun part of a food tour, and what we should say, the typical tour you do, there's probably a lot of different tours, but it's basically a four-hour, $100 morning experience that could be end up being an early lunch because you're going to go by five or six places, right?
It's a late breakfast and an early lunch. It's a progressive brunch, basically.
You don't want anybody to start your tour with a full stomach, that's for sure.
Please come hungry.
Okay. And just very quickly, I would imagine there's a similar kind of template for a food tour. You could go to a bakery, you could go to the market, try a pastry, do some wine tasting, and maybe some gelato, right? That sort of thing.
Yes. Those are the highlights, I would say. And then there's always some seasonal things as well.
I think a fun dimension of that that's probably unheralded is a chance to hang out with a local like you, often an American expat that's really gotten into the local scene and is well-connected with local merchants and artisans. Tell us about the kind of people that's a byproduct of tasting the food that you'll get to meet on a food tour.
I have the fortune of doing my tours in the San Lorenzo neighborhood, and those are all people that I've known for 20, 21 years now. And I'm absolutely in love with the baker. His name is Remo. Remo and his sister Ivana are I guess I could say they're the bread and butter of San Lorenzo neighborhood. They are their bread is served in many of the sandwich shops and the restaurants, in the wine shops, and the little crostini and the little bottoncini. I miss them. I haven't seen them in almost a month now. I've been traveling.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I want to do when I go back to Florence or come home to Florence.
I love it. I love the way you say all those words. I wish I could speak Italian. give me that little rundown of beautiful, tasty treats you could buy in a bakery. Close your eyes and just think of them. Okay.
Okay. At the forno, I like to have the schiacciata ripiena. And my favorite is the one with salsiccia e stracchino, sausage and stracchino cheese. I also love the gorgonzola e mella, which is gorgonzola and apple. And then they also make a carciofo e parmigiano, which is fantastic. And then they also make fried dough called coccoli. And I love to get the coccoli with a little bit of stracchino cheese and prosciutto. It's a classic. Okay, now I need to go back to Italy immediately.
Nice. Doesn't it kind of break your tour guiding heart when somebody travels all the way to Italy and then they just have spaghetti bolognese every night, or they just have a pizza with pepperoni on it, you know?
It absolutely breaks my heart, and yes.
You know, if you don't know the name on the menu, that's a good thing, you know?
Right, exactly.
Because
don't be afraid.
It's probably local. If it's a good restaurant, it's local and it's seasonal, and that's really important.
It's so important. And I'm glad you said that because I try to serve things on the tour that get people out of their comfort zone. I'm not serving bruschetta.
Right.
I'm not serving, and that's how you pronounce it. I'm not serving, bolognese sauce. I'm not serving pizza.
I'm not going to hire you to give me a spaghetti bolognese. I've come around to the realization lately, Toni, that culture shock is not something you try to avoid. Try something new. You don't need to like it. It's just very interesting to have sampled something that all the people in that neighborhood like, that they've been eating for centuries.
That's part of their culture. That's who they are. And if you don't try the things they love, you're never going to truly understand those people.
Something else that's very interesting to me, Toni, is that when we think of Italian food, we think Italian food. But Italians, they don't go out for Italian food. They're eating still food from Italy, but different regions. And there's a real passion for every region. And restaurants will be known as a regional restaurant. And that's kind of going out. That's kind of going ethnic, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we often will travel to other parts of Italy and rave about the food, but also when we get home, we're so happy to have our unsalted bread in Florence. And
that's a good transition. Let's talk about Tuscany.
Yes.
Florence is the major city, the leading city, the biggest city in Tuscany. And what does it famous for. I mean, every city, every great city has the food it's recognized for. Florence has a lot of tourism, but with or without the tourism, it's got this foundation of its own cuisine.
Our cuisine, the majority of it is actually sono piatti poveri. It's the, I'm blanking out on how to say it.
The poverty is sort of based on the hard times of the past when people didn't have a lot of food and they had to eat yesterday's bread or something like that.
Yes, thank you. It's not about presentation. It's about flavor. It's about fresh ingredients. It's about exalting a few ingredients, not trying to cover up one thing with sauces and tons of garlic and all those things. So most of your recipes in Tuscany and Florence in particular are going to have maybe 4 to 5 ingredients. And one ingredient is going to have a strong flavor. The rest are going to just exalt that flavor.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. One gets to have the microphone and be in the front of the stage.
Yes.
And the others are like the, they're the backup singers.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's not a boy band. There is definitely a lead singer.
No, you got a lead singer and then you got the pips. All right. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're exploring food delights of Florence right now with Toni Mazzaglia. She runs a company called Taste Florence. Toni links to her favorite eateries and markets and wine bars and viewpoints in Florence on her website. That's tasteflorence.com. So, Toni, we're going through some Florence delights. I think a big thing about Tuscany is the beef. When we think Chianina beef, we're thinking beefsteak alla Fiorentina, right? Pardon my Italian, but when you see alla Fiorentina, that's Florentine style, and that's a big deal.
It is. Oh, boy, is it ever. Everyone loves the Florentine steak. It's the pride and joy of every menu. Not everyone does it well, but the Florentine steak, it's the kind of steak you share with 2 or 3 people.
It's usually
going to weigh quite a bit, about a kilo.
We went together to Ristoro di Cambi, I think.
Yes.
C-A-M-B-I. I will spell that one for people. It's on the other side of the river. It's a 10-minute walk from all the action. And I love it because they bring you the cut of red meat, and they tell you how much that's going to be, and you know how much that's going to cost by the kilo. And you can share it. So you could get one big T-bone steak for 4 people, and then you can supplement that with beautiful side dishes.
Yes. Did you have beans with it or potatoes? Do you remember what you like with it?
Red wine. That's what I like with it. Red wine and steak and and grilled rare. Grilled more rare than what most Americans would go for. And I would remind you, kind of go with them. They know they're not going to bring it to you raw, but go with what they recommend.
Oh, also, and they're not going to bring it to you well done because they will kick you out of the restaurant.
Oh, yeah. No, that would be a sacrilege. They would. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. They get very, very upset.
And there's that cuisine of the old days of poverty.
Yeah.
So you've got soups, you've got ribollita. And ribollita is kind of going back to the poor days, isn't it? That's sort of a bread soup.
It all ties together because we have this unsalted bread, and salt is what preserves your bread. So if you have unsalted bread, your bread goes stale rather quickly. And bread is a luxury. So if you have bread and it goes stale, you're not going to throw that bread away. You're going to invent recipes to use that bread. So we have tons of recipes. We have these beautiful soups, ribollita, which translates to reboiled. It's a vegetable and bean and kale soup. And then the bread soaks up that broth and it turns into this nice, what we call a papa. And then we also have papa al pomodoro, which is a bread and tomato soup with a little basil. So if you like tomato soup, this is just tomato soup with some stale bread thrown in, basically. But of course, we make it more delicious because we're here in Florence.
Nice.
And our olive oil. Don't forget the olive oil, how important it is to Tuscans because they're very proud of their oil.
You went with me to a beautiful little district called San Nicolo, again, on the other side of the river. So many great little characteristic corners are on the other side of the river, the Ultra Arno, the wrong side of the tracks. But in Europe, that'd be the other side of the river. And in San Nicolo, we went to this cool bar, and it had a, what's it called when you have a, you have a glass of wine, then you get a wooden board with a whole bunch of different cheeses and meats?
An aperitivo or an apericena, and then that wooden board would be called a tagliere. It's where you slice things usually.
Yeah.
Tagliare is to slice. And so that's kind of you've probably noticed it's becoming a trend all over the world now, these food boards, right? But they're called a tagliere.
Toni, I've heard that with the traffic-free center in Florence, it's a beautiful thing because it keeps away all the buses and the trucks and it makes it more bike-friendly and pedestrian-friendly, and you can actually hear the birds. It's quite nice. The consequence for tour groups is we have to park the bus at the edge and walk in with our suitcases. Yeah. But that's a small price to pay for having the traffic free downtown. But one interesting impact of that is, I understand, a lot of locals have a hard time getting downtown because they can no longer come there with their cars. Consequently, the restaurants in the center no longer have that local clientele who are now eating outside of the center more. And that means that restaurants in the old center are more touristic in the evening.
Yes and no. I would say that the traffic or the limited driving zones and parking, really parking, I would say is the largest issue, because even if we were allowed to drive, there would be nowhere to put the car. But I can say, at least in my observations, since the pandemic, everyone is kind of returning to the city because we missed it so much. So I'm seeing more locals eating in the restaurants. And also there's a lot of changes. We still have all these classic restaurants like the ones we've been talking about, but there's also a lot of more modern places opening up. Coffee shops where you can actually sit for an hour and drink your coffee and bring your laptop, things we didn't have 10 years ago. The city's changing a lot, and there are a lot of places that only cater to tourists, but these historic restaurants still have a local clientele. Yeah. They just show up at 9 p.m. and not at 7 p.m.
That is so important. You can go to a restaurant, poke your head in the door at 7:30 and go, this is just a tourist trap. Come back at 9 o'clock and it'll be busy with locals. She left North Carolina in 1997 for Italy to research her family tree and attend university. For Tony Mazzaglia, you could say it was love at first sight. Tony operates food tour walks of Florence to the city's characteristic restaurants, vendors, and wine bars. You can find out about her various food and wine tours at tasteflorence.com. You know, one exciting dimension for travelers when it comes to experiences is cooking classes.
Yes. Can
you tell me a little bit about options that there are, not particular places or businesses, but are there options where you go shopping, where you actually eat what you cooked? What do you recommend for a cooking experience as opposed to the guided walks that we were talking about earlier?
Yes, there is a whole menu of options of cooking classes. You can take a class where you go to the market in the morning and then cook the food, the ingredients that you bought with your instructor. Or there are other options where you can just show up. They've already got everything chopped up if you just want to kind of learn the recipe, even just demonstrations. So there's a whole gamut depending on your cooking level and what you're looking to do, what your preferences are. And then there's classes for pizza making and gelato making and pasta making. And I mean, there's really a huge variety, dozens and dozens of schools. Now, there's even a few that do the Florentine steak, which I think is a great idea because then you get to figure out how to make it at home and share it with your classmates, because it's a commitment to eat a Florentine steak if you're by yourself.
Yeah.
So I recommend taking food tours and cooking classes if you're a solo traveler, because you meet new people, but you also don't have that overwhelming amount of food, yet you get to try everything.
And, you know, this scene is so ever-changing with all the different cooking classes, all the different food tours and so on. And no guidebook can know what's happening right now because companies come and go. And this is one place where I would go to the internet, and there's different services. Where do you find a consumer can go to know what is available in the way of food tours and cooking classes in Milan or Naples or Florence or Venice or whatever? There's so many now, and there's such a good opportunity. And there, it's not a matter of what's good and bad. It's a matter of what fits what you're looking for and your budget and so on. What are the best sources of information for this online?
That's a great way to put it. What fits best for each person, because not everyone's looking for the same thing. I would say it's going to sound kind of simple, but I would do a Google search or whatever your search engine of choice is, and then check a cross section. Don't only look on things like TripAdvisor. Look at TripAdvisor and the reviews and make sure that a company's been around for a while, but don't stop there. Also look and just Google the name of the owner or Google the name of the company and see if they've had any news articles written about them, any major complaints written about them. So there's just so many. If you have time to research, then you'll make the right choice.
You mentioned TripAdvisor. You know, I'm not that big on hotels and restaurants recommended in TripAdvisor, but what I am big on in TripAdvisor is the things to do category. I find anywhere in my travels, if I want to know what's going on, who are the small businesses, who are the food tours, where are the cooking classes, they would pretty much all be listed on TripAdvisor. And I don't get too hung up on who's in the top 10 because it's easy to kind of game that. Mm-hmm. I just want to know who's in business. And from that, I can do further study. What's your take on TripAdvisor?
So that's a really good question, Rick. I began Taste Florence right around the time that TripAdvisor was a new thing. And so I was lucky enough to be on TripAdvisor when I didn't have much competition. And it's definitely the reason my company took off as quickly as it did. Unfortunately, the structure of TripAdvisor has changed because, and I understand that, they wanted to make money, but they partnered with Viator. And so now you could be looking at TripAdvisor and reading legitimate reviews of anyone's business, whether they're number one on the list or number 20 on the list. But while you're reading that, you're going to get a pop-up window, and that's going to be for a tour that is bookable through Viator, aka through TripAdvisor. So it's, I don't know exactly, I don't know if I would call it gaming, but it's definitely not totally
as a consumer,
fair.
We need to be aware of that.
Right, exactly.
There's a lot of aggressive work going on of any crowdsourcing sites where they can get their commissions and net a little more advertising revenue. Tony Mazzaglia, it's so much fun talking to you because I love to have a local expert on a place that I'm invariably going to be going again soon. Couple of last points. First of all, if you want to eat somewhere with a nice view in Florence, I've always found that a challenge.
What's your advice? It is really a challenge. So we have places, if you want to eat with a nice view, just like in any other city, you're either going to pay a lot or the food isn't going to be good. So those are those are things you want to keep in mind. If you want to pay a lot but have good food, and I say pay a lot by Italian standards, actually not that much, right? So you would go to, it's called Golden View Open Bar. It's a beautiful business on the river. We stopped in there and had that fabulous cheese. Do you remember that cheese, Rick?
They're good. I love it. And you can get
get
a table right over the river. And it's just great service, wonderful food.
Fabulous view.
And also there's on top of buildings, kind of terraces and viewpoints that are quite nice. And finally, Tony, gelato. Florence is famous for gelato. I'm sort of burned out on gelato because of 25 years of tour guiding. But if I was going to Florence for my first time, I'd be looking for the latest, greatest gelato. What's the news?
Well, latest and greatest, there's a whole bunch of that. I mean, there's a bunch of great places opening up all over town. But I'm a little bit of a curmudgeon. I like my places tried and true. And I like my historic shop called Perché No. And even though they are an old historic shop, they do new flavors all the time. So you're not going to get the same thing you got last time. Okay. Sometimes they do ones with, for example, curry. It's fabulous. Curry and candied mango. They have one that has toasted sesame and chestnut honey. They do Sauertorte, the Sauer cake that comes from Vienna. So that one gelato shop has a huge variety of fantastic flavors.
There you go.
High quality and natural.
Why not? Isn't that it? Perché no?
Perché no? Why not? Exactly.
And then I love the little neighborhood ones that, you know, only the neighborhood knows, and they've got a dedicated following, and they don't have big mountains of neon-colored, you know, gelato, but they've just got good quality, honest gelato.
As it should be, yeah.
Hey, Tony Mazzaglia, thanks so much, and best wishes with Taste Florence, and next time I'm in town, let's go into the Ultra Arno and have a meal we'll never forget.
I can't wait.
Buon appetito.
Grazie.
Ah, che bello caffè, pure il gatto lo sanno fa. La ricetta che Ciccirinella compagna di cella ci ha dato mamma. Ah, che bello caffè, pure il gatto lo sanno fa. La ricetta di Ciccirinella compagna di cella precisa mamma.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Casmara Hall and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Look at Rick's checklist for what to pack in your suitcase and share tips with fellow travelers. It's part of our online travel forum that you'll find at ricksteves.com. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.